Most of your exhaustion does not come from effort, but from resistance. From trying to manage people you cannot change, outcomes you cannot predict, and a future that refuses to obey your plans. You carry this weight every day without questioning it, and slowly, your mind learns tension instead of clarity. Stoicism begins with a truth that feels uncomfortable at first, yet deeply liberating once you accept it. You were never meant to control the world, only yourself. Everything else, no matter how tightly you grip it, will eventually remind you of this fact. Detachment is not giving up. It is giving control back to where it belongs. In this episode, you will learn how to stop leaking energy into what you cannot control, how to reclaim emotional independence, and how to build a mind so steady that external chaos can no longer shake it. Because the moment you stop fighting reality, you stop suffering unnecessarily. And from here, the journey begins where all Stoic wisdom begins. The illusion of control. From a very early age, you are taught, subtly, consistently, almost invisibly, that safety comes from control, that if you plan well enough, anticipate enough, worry enough, you can stay ahead of pain, failure, and uncertainty. And over time, this belief becomes so ingrained that you stop questioning it altogether. You begin to assume that tension is normal, that mental pressure is responsible, that constantly monitoring people, outcomes and possibilities is simply what intelligent adults do. But this belief carries a hidden cost. The more you try to control what lies outside your authority, the more unstable your inner world becomes. Your mind never rests, because reality never fully cooperates. People surprise you, plans fail, outcomes change, and life keeps moving in directions you did not approve. And instead of adapting, you resist. You replay conversations. You predict disasters. You try to manage reactions before they exist. What you call being prepared slowly turns into chronic inner conflict. This is not control. It is fear disguised as responsibility. The Stoics saw this pattern with ruthless clarity. They understood that the world is not chaotic because it lacks order, but because it follows laws far greater than individual desire. Other people act according to their character, not your expectations. Events unfold according to causes you do not command. Time moves forward without consulting your preferences. And yet, the untrained mind behaves as if anxiety itself could bend these forces. This is the illusion of control. Epictetus reduced this entire struggle to one decisive distinction that sits at the core of Stoic philosophy. Some things are up to you, and some things are not. And confusing the two is the source of nearly all unnecessary suffering. Your thoughts, judgments, values, intentions, and actions belong to you completely. Other people's opinions, their behavior, external events, outcomes, success, failure, and even time itself do not, no matter how deeply you care about them. Every time you cross this boundary, you pay a price. When your peace depends on outcomes, you become anxious. When it depends on approval, you become dependent. When it depends on certainty, you become fearful in a world that offers none. The illusion of control promises security, but delivers fragility because it ties your inner stability to forces that were never meant to support it. Detachment begins not with letting go, but with seeing clearly. You begin to notice how much of your mental energy is wasted trying to manage what does not belong to you. You see that worry has never prevented loss, that tension has never guaranteed success, and that fear has never created clarity. Slowly, the mind starts to release its grip, not because you force it to, but because the illusion no longer convinces you. This shift is quiet, but radical. Instead of asking how to make life behave, you begin asking how to remain steady regardless of how it behaves. Instead of trying to dominate the future, you prepare your character. Instead of chasing certainty, you build resilience. You stop fighting reality and start aligning with it. This does not make you passive, it makes you precise. You act fully where action is possible, and you release completely where control is impossible. And in that distinction, something stabilizes inside you. The world does not suddenly become predictable, but it stops shaking you from the inside. Events still happen, people still disappoint. Outcomes still change, but they no longer own your inner state. The illusion of control keeps the mind restless. The acceptance of limits makes it strong, and once this illusion dissolves, detachment stops feeling like loss and starts feeling like clarity, because you are no longer exhausting yourself trying to command what was never yours to command. From here, the next step becomes unavoidable. Letting go of attachments. Attachment rarely announces itself as weakness. It presents itself as commitment, as loyalty, as love, as ambition, as the reasonable desire for stability in an uncertain world. You tell yourself that holding on tightly is a form of care, that needing people or outcomes is natural, that your happiness should depend on things going well. And because this belief is socially reinforced, you almost never question it. But slowly, attachment begins to reveal its true nature. The more you bind your inner peace to people, results, or circumstances, the more fragile you become. Because whatever you need in order to be okay gains the power to disturb you. Your mood starts rising and falling with events. Your self-worth begins to fluctuate with approval. Your sense of safety becomes conditional. What once felt like security turns into a constant state of emotional vulnerability. The Stoics understood this mechanism with unsettling precision. They saw that attachment doesn't protect you from loss. It amplifies the pain of it. The tighter your grip, the more you fear change. The more you fear change, the more you resist reality. And the more you resist reality, the more life feels hostile, unstable, and unfair. What you call love becomes fear of absence. What you call ambition becomes terror of failure. What you call stability becomes dependence. This is why Seneca warned that it is not what you have that enslaves you, but what you cannot afford to lose. The moment your peace depends on something remaining unchanged, you have handed your freedom over to chance. And chance, by its nature, is unreliable. Detachment begins when you see this without defensiveness, not when you stop caring, but when you stop clinging. There is a crucial difference between valuing something and needing it. You can love people deeply without making them responsible for your emotional stability. You can pursue goals passionately without tying your identity to success or failure. You can enjoy what you have without demanding that it last. This shift is uncomfortable at first. Attachment feels safe because it promises certainty, and detachment removes that illusion. It forces you to stand on your own psychological ground. It asks you to accept that loss is possible, that change is inevitable, and that nothing external was ever guaranteed. For the untrained mind, this feels threatening. For the disciplined mind, it becomes liberating. As attachment loosens, your range of movement returns. You regain the ability to walk away without panic, to adapt without resentment, to face endings without collapsing. You stop tolerating disrespect out of fear of being alone. You stop betraying your values to preserve outcomes. You stop negotiating your peace with circumstances that refuse to cooperate. This does not make you cold. It makes you grounded. A detached person does not love less. They love more cleanly, without desperation, without possession, without the constant fear of loss poisoning every interaction. Their presence becomes calmer because it is no longer asking the world to behave in a specific way in order to feel whole. The Stoics practiced this daily, not through denial, but through remembrance. They reminded themselves that everything external is temporary, not to become numb, but to become free. They enjoyed what was present without assuming permanence. invested effort without demanding reward, and accepted loss without turning it into identity. Attachment binds your peace to chance, detachment anchors it within, and when this anchoring begins to take root, something subtle changes in how you experience life. You still care, you still strive, you still love, but you are no longer emotionally hostage to outcomes you cannot command. This is where real strength begins. From here, detachment must be understood even more clearly, because many misunderstand it completely. And so the next step is essential. Detachment is not indifference. One of the quiet reasons many people resist the idea of detachment is because they confuse it with emotional death, as if letting go means becoming cold, distant, or disconnected from life itself. When in truth, this confusion comes from a lifetime of living at the mercy of emotion rather than in relationship with it. You were never taught how to feel without drowning, how to care without collapsing, how to experience pain without turning it into suffering. And so the moment you hear the word detachment, your mind imagines emptiness instead of mastery. But Stoicism never asked you to stop feeling. It asked you to stop losing yourself inside what you feel. Think about how emotions usually operate in your life. Something happens outside of you, a word, a look, a loss, a delay, and almost instantly your inner world reacts as if it were under attack. Your mood shifts, your thoughts spiral, your body tightens. Without noticing the transition, you are no longer experiencing an emotion. You are being carried by it. Anger becomes your voice. Fear becomes your logic, sadness becomes your identity, and in that moment, you are no longer present, you are possessed. This is not sensitivity, it is captivity. The Stoics saw this clearly. They understood that emotions are natural movements of the mind, like waves passing through the sea, but suffering begins when you identify with the wave and forget that you are the sea itself. Detachment is not about suppressing emotion, but about restoring this forgotten distinction. You feel the wave fully, but you do not let it decide who you are or how you act. Epictetus expressed this with devastating simplicity when he explained that events themselves are neutral and that it is our judgments about them that disturb us. What hurts you is not what happens, but the meaning you assign to it. The story you tell yourself about what it says about you, about life, about the future. Detachment begins the moment you learn to pause between the event and the judgment, between the feeling and the reaction. This pause changes everything. In that space, emotion loses its authority. You still feel anger, but you no longer speak from it. You still feel fear, but you no longer obey it. You still feel sadness, but you no longer build your identity around it. Detachment gives you the ability to experience emotion without being ruled by it, to remain open without becoming fragile, to care deeply without surrendering control of your inner world. This is not indifference, it is emotional sovereignty. An indifferent person disconnects from life to avoid pain. A detached person stays fully engaged while refusing to be internally destabilized. One numbs themselves, the other governs themselves. The difference is subtle but profound. Indifference is a retreat. Detachment is a position of strength. Over time, this practice reshapes your entire inner landscape. You begin to notice that emotions rise and fall on their own when you stop feeding them with resistance or dramatization. You stop escalating discomfort into crisis. You stop interpreting every emotional fluctuation as a problem that must be solved immediately. Calm becomes something you return to, not something you chase. This is where clarity is born. You start responding instead of reacting. You choose your words instead of releasing them. You act from principle instead of impulse. And because your inner state is no longer hostage to external events, your presence becomes steadier, heavier, more grounded. People feel it. Situations change around it. Not because you are controlling anything, but because you are no longer internally scattered. Detachment does not strip you of emotion. It strips emotion of its power to hijack you. You remain human, sensitive, aware, and capable of deep connection, but you are no longer volatile. You no longer swing between extremes. You no longer hand your peace to whatever happens next. Your inner world becomes ordered, not rigid, alive, not chaotic. This is the kind of strength Stoicism was designed to build, not the strength of suppression, but the strength of containment. Not emotional absence, but emotional intelligence lived in real time. Not distance from life, but freedom within it. And once you understand detachment in this way, not as indifference but as inner authority, you are ready for the next transformation where detachment stops being a concept and becomes a way of standing on your own psychological ground. Emotional independence. At some point in your life, often without you noticing when it began, your emotional state became tied to things outside of you. A word of approval could lift you for hours. A look of disinterest could ruin your day. A message unanswered could create anxiety. A small rejection could echo far longer than it deserved. Slowly, quietly, your emotions learned to wait for permission from the outside world before deciding how to feel. This is emotional dependence. It does not look dramatic. It looks normal. It looks like caring. It looks like being human in a connected world, but beneath the surface, something fragile is forming, a mind that cannot regulate itself without external input. And when your emotional balance depends on people, circumstances, or outcomes behaving correctly, you are never truly stable, only temporarily soothed. Stoicism was built to break this pattern. Emotional independence does not mean that you stop feeling, nor does it mean that you become detached from relationships or experiences. It means that your inner state is no longer outsourced. You no longer wait for the world to tell you whether today will be calm or chaotic, whether you are worthy or lacking, whether you are secure or threatened. That authority returns to where it belongs, inside you. This shift is uncomfortable at first. When you stop seeking emotional regulation from the outside, there is a silence you must face. No reassurance arrives. No validation smooths the edges. No reaction rescues you from discomfort. And in this silence, many people panic, mistaking the absence of external support for emptiness, when in reality, it is the beginning of self-mastery. Emotional independence begins when you learn to observe your inner reactions without immediately trying to escape them. You feel irritation rise, and instead of expressing it impulsively or suppressing it forcefully, you watch it. You notice fear without rushing to neutralize it. You allow sadness without turning it into identity. This observation creates distance, and distance creates choice. This is the inner observer awakening. The Stoics understood that emotions are signals, not commands. They inform you, but they do not decide for you. When this distinction becomes lived experience rather than theory, your reactions slow down. You stop being dragged by every internal movement. You regain authorship over how you respond. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself repeatedly that the mind has the power to withdraw its judgments at any moment, and, in doing so, withdraw its suffering. This was not optimism. It was discipline. The discipline of refusing to let emotions dictate reality. As emotional independence strengthens, something profound changes in how you relate to others. You stop expecting people to regulate you. You stop needing them to behave in specific ways for you to feel okay. Appreciation becomes welcome rather than necessary. Disagreement becomes tolerable rather than threatening. Distance no longer feels like abandonment. This does not weaken relationships. It purifies them. When you are emotionally independent, you choose people rather than cling to them. You engage without desperation. You give without bargaining. your presence becomes calmer because it is not asking for emotional rescue. Others feel this stability, even if they cannot name it. Independence also changes how you face difficulty. Pain no longer immediately turns into suffering. Discomfort no longer demands instant relief. You trust yourself to endure inner turbulence without collapsing. This trust builds resilience, not the kind that avoids hardship, but the kind that knows it can pass through it intact. Emotional independence is not emotional isolation. It is emotional grounding. You are no longer waiting for the world to stabilize you. You stabilize yourself and then meet the world from that center. Life continues to surprise, disappoint, and challenge you, but it no longer has unrestricted access to your inner balance. This is a quiet power, a power that does not announce itself, a power that does not react impulsively, a power that remains intact under pressure. And once emotional independence takes root, detachment deepens naturally because you are no longer attached to reactions, moods, or emotional outcomes. You are anchored. You are present. You are internally governed. From here, the journey continues into a truth that gives emotional independence its depth and its patience. Acceptance of impermanence. One of the deepest sources of human suffering is not loss itself, but the quiet refusal to accept that loss is woven into the structure of life. You expect permanence from things that were never designed to last. Relationships, success, youth, certainty, even emotional states. And when change arrives, as it always does, it feels like betrayal rather than reality. You ask why things did not stay the same, instead of asking why you believed they ever would. Stoicism begins to mature the moment you stop making this mistake. Impermanence is not a flaw in existence, it is its operating system. Everything that appears will pass, everything that forms will dissolve, everything that rises will eventually fall into something else. When you resist this truth, you suffer twice. Once from the event itself, and once from your refusal to accept it. When you accept it, pain may still visit you, but it no longer turns into despair. This acceptance does not happen intellectually. It happens through confrontation. You begin to notice how often fear is really fear of change, how anxiety is often attachment to a version of the future that does not exist, how grief is intensified not by loss alone, but by the demand that what was meaningful should have been permanent. Slowly, the mind begins to soften its grip, not because it no longer cares, but because it understands the cost of clinging. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself daily that everything he loved was already in the process of leaving him, not as a gesture of pessimism, but as an act of mental clarity. By remembering impermanence, he did not love less. He loved without illusion. He enjoyed what was present without demanding that it remain untouched by time. This is where freedom begins to appear. When you accept impermanence, you stop living in constant anticipation of loss. You stop tightening your grip on moments as they pass. You allow experiences to be complete without trying to freeze them. You understand that change does not mean meaninglessness and that endings do not cancel what was real. Acceptance transforms how you face pain. Instead of asking why something ended, you ask what it revealed. Instead of fighting change, you adapt to it. Instead of collapsing when something leaves, you integrate what it gave you. Impermanence stops feeling like theft and starts feeling like movement. This does not make you passive. It makes you flexible. A flexible mind bends without breaking. It flows where resistance would snap. It understands that life is not a structure to be preserved, but a process to be participated in. When impermanence is accepted, resilience deepens because you no longer need guarantees in order to remain stable. You still grieve, you still feel loss, you still experience longing, but you no longer add the second wound. The belief that something has gone wrong simply because something has changed. This is one of the most liberating realizations Stoicism offers. Nothing is promised, and because nothing is promised, everything can be appreciated without fear. You begin to live with presence instead of anxiety, gratitude instead of clinging, awareness instead of denial. The moment becomes enough, not because it lasts, but because it exists at all. Acceptance of impermanence does not numb the heart, it steadies it. You stop demanding that life remain still, and in doing so, you regain your ability to move with it. You stop fighting the natural rhythm of appearing and disappearing, and as that fight ends, so does much of your unnecessary suffering. From this acceptance, a deeper form of strength emerges, one that no longer depends on stability outside of you, because it has learned to remain centered within change itself. And with this foundation in place, the next step becomes clear, where detachment turns into inner command rather than mere acceptance. Mastering your inner world. There comes a moment, often after disappointment has repeated itself enough times, when you begin to realize that the greatest battles of your life were never truly external, even though they always appeared that way on the surface. The arguments, the losses, the instability, the pressure of circumstances. All of them entered your life from the outside, but none of them had the power to wound you until they were given permission inside your own mind. This is where Stoicism draws its most decisive line. You cannot command events, you cannot govern other people, you cannot stabilize the world, but you can govern the space within you where all of these things are interpreted, judged, magnified, or dissolved. Most people never master this space. They live as if their inner world were an open city, unguarded, allowing every opinion, setback, insult, and uncertainty to enter freely and take control. Their thoughts react before they are examined, their emotions escalate before they are understood, and their peace is repeatedly surrendered to forces that were never meant to rule it. Mastery begins when this changes. To master your inner world does not mean suppressing thought or emotion, but organizing them, placing them in their proper hierarchy, and refusing to let what is external dictate what is internal. It is the realization that while you may not choose what happens to you, you always choose the meaning you assign to it, and that meaning determines whether you suffer or remain steady. Marcus Aurelius wrote to himself as a reminder, not as theory, that you have power over your mind, not outside events, and that understanding this truth is the source of strength. He was not speaking from comfort, but from responsibility, pressure, and constant uncertainty, which is precisely why his insight carries weight. He learned that calm is not something you wait for the world to provide, but something you generate by disciplining your judgments. This discipline is practiced in small moments, when irritation arises and you choose not to feed it with narrative, when fear appears and you observe it without obeying it, when a setback occurs and you refuse to turn it into identity. Each time you do this, you reclaim territory within yourself. You reduce the reach of chaos. You build a psychological fortress, not by blocking life out, but by filtering how life enters. Over time, your inner world becomes less reactive, less dramatic, less vulnerable to disturbance, not because you have hardened, but because you have clarified what deserves your attention and what does not. Mastery is not loud. It does not announce itself with confidence or control over others. It reveals itself quietly in how slowly you react, in how little external noise can move you, in how quickly you return to center after disruption. You begin to notice that situations which once consumed your thoughts now pass through with minimal friction. Problems still exist, but they no longer occupy your entire inner landscape. This is the foundation of real resilience. When your inner world is mastered, you are no longer dependent on favorable conditions in order to function well. You can think clearly under pressure. You can act deliberately in uncertainty. You can remain calm without becoming passive and engaged without becoming enslaved. The external world continues to change, but it no longer dictates your internal stability. Mastering the inner world is not a single achievement. It is a daily practice of attention, judgment, and restraint, a repeated choice to govern yourself rather than demand that life govern itself for your comfort. And with each repetition, detachment deepens naturally, because you are no longer attached to reactions, moods, or mental noise. From this point forward, detachment stops being something you try to do. It becomes something you are. And once inner mastery takes root, another illusion begins to dissolve: the belief that approval from the outside world has any power over your worth or direction. That is where the next transformation begins: breaking free from external validation. For most of your life, whether you were aware of it or not, your sense of worth was being quietly negotiated with the outside world. A compliment could lift you, silence could unsettle you. Approval felt like confirmation that you were on the right path, while criticism or indifference felt like a verdict against you. Over time, this constant negotiation became so normal that you stopped seeing it as dependence and began calling it motivation, connection, or ambition. But what you were really doing was outsourcing your value. External validation is seductive because it feels reassuring. It gives the illusion of certainty in a world full of doubt. When others approve of you, you feel safe. When they recognize you, you feel real. When they praise you, you feel worthy. And yet, this safety is unstable by design, because it rests on something you do not control: other people's perceptions, moods, standards, and expectations. Stoicism was uncompromising about this weakness. It taught that the moment your self-worth depends on applause, you have placed your inner stability in the hands of strangers, crowds, and circumstances that cannot possibly carry that responsibility. You begin adjusting yourself to be acceptable rather than aligned. You say what is liked rather than what is true. You choose paths that look impressive rather than those that feel meaningful. And slowly, without dramatic collapse, you drift away from yourself. This drift is subtle. You do not wake up one day feeling fake. You simply feel tired, restless, slightly hollow, as if no amount of approval ever quite satisfies you for long. And it never will, because validation treats the symptom, not the cause. It soothes insecurity without resolving it, reinforcing the belief that your value must be confirmed externally again and again. Epictetus warned that if you seek praise from others, you place yourself under their authority, because whoever controls what you value controls you. This is not a moral statement, it is a psychological one. When validation becomes necessary, freedom quietly disappears. Breaking free from this dependence is not about rejecting others or pretending you do not care what people think. It is about restoring the proper order. Appreciation can be welcomed, but it is no longer required. Criticism can be heard, but it is no longer devastating. You listen, you consider, you learn if there is something to learn, and then you decide. The decision returns to you. This is where dignity begins to form. You stop explaining yourself excessively. You stop performing for approval. You stop reshaping your identity to fit expectations that change from one person to the next. Instead, you measure yourself against something far more stable: your own values, your own standards, your own integrity. Progress becomes internal rather than theatrical. Success becomes alignment rather than recognition. This shift feels uncomfortable at first. When validation is removed, a quiet insecurity surfaces, one that was always there but kept numb by constant feedback. You feel exposed, unconfirmed, alone with your own judgment. Many people retreat at this stage, rushing back to noise, approval, and reassurance, because standing alone with your own standards requires courage. But if you stay, something changes. You begin to trust yourself, not blindly, but steadily. You learn to approve of your own effort, your own growth, your own restraint. Your confidence becomes quieter but more durable. It no longer spikes with praise or collapses with disapproval. It holds. This is real confidence. A person who no longer needs validation becomes difficult to manipulate. They cannot be easily flattered into compromise or shamed into conformity. They listen, but they are not owned. They engage, but they are not dependent. Their presence becomes calm because it is not asking for permission to exist. This does not isolate you from others. It actually improves connection. When you are no longer seeking validation, relationships become cleaner. You give without bargaining. You speak without performing. You connect without fear of losing yourself. Others may not always agree with you, but they feel your solidity, and that solidity commands respect without demanding it. Breaking free from external validation is one of the most liberating steps in detachment. You stop living as a reflection of others' opinions and start living as a coherent self. You move forward guided by inner standards rather than shifting applause. And once this freedom takes root, silence begins to reveal its true power because you are no longer afraid of what it might say about you. That is where the next chapter leads. The power of silence. At some point, once you stop depending on external validation to stabilize your sense of self, silence begins to feel different. What once felt uncomfortable or threatening no longer carries the same weight, because silence is no longer interpreted as rejection, emptiness, or invisibility. Instead, it becomes a space where nothing is demanded of you, where no performance is required, where your inner voice can finally be heard without competition. Most people fear silence because silence removes distraction. And distraction has been their primary coping mechanism. In noise, the mind does not have to face itself. In constant conversation, stimulation and reaction, unresolved thoughts remain buried, emotions stay unexamined, and inner contradictions never demand resolution. Silence interrupts this escape. It strips away external reference points and leaves you alone with your own judgments, impulses, and truths. This is why silence feels heavy to the untrained mind, not because it is empty, but because it is revealing. The Stoics understood silence as a form of strength, not the silence of suppression, but the silence of restraint. The silence that comes from no longer needing to react to everything, explain everything, defend everything, or comment on everything. When you are silent by choice rather than fear, you reclaim control over your attention, your words, and your emotional energy. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself repeatedly that it is possible to live a good life without announcing it, without broadcasting intention, and without demanding recognition. His silence was not withdrawal from responsibility, but clarity of purpose. He spoke when necessary, acted when required, and remained silent when words would add nothing but noise. Silence sharpens perception. When you stop filling every moment with reaction, you begin to notice patterns you once missed. You observe human behavior without immediately judging it. You listen without preparing your response. You sense emotional undercurrents instead of being pulled into them. In silence, your awareness expands because it is no longer fragmented by constant output. This is where discernment is born. A silent mind becomes selective. It learns what deserves attention and what does not. It stops wasting energy on arguments that lead nowhere, explanations that are not respected, and reactions that only fuel unnecessary conflict. You begin to understand that not every thought needs expression, not every emotion needs display, and not every situation requires your involvement. Silence also restores power to your words. When you speak less, what you say carries more weight. Your words are no longer diluted by excess. You stop talking to fill space and start speaking with intention. People listen differently, not because you demand attention, but because your presence has become grounded rather than reactive. This is not manipulation, it is coherence. Silence creates distance between stimulus and response, and in that distance, freedom exists. You are no longer compelled to justify yourself immediately, to prove your point, or to defend your identity. You can wait. You can observe. You can choose your response, or choose none at all. Many conflicts dissolve at this stage, not because they are resolved verbally, but because you no longer feed them emotionally. When you stop reacting, situations lose momentum. When you stop explaining, misunderstandings reveal themselves naturally. When you stop chasing clarity from others, your own clarity deepens. Silence is not avoidance, it is discipline. It is the recognition that your energy is finite and valuable, and that spending it on noise weakens your inner structure. As silence becomes habitual, your mind grows calmer, your reactions slower, and your presence heavier. You are no longer rushed. You are no longer scattered. You are internally aligned. This is why silence feels powerful, not because it dominates others, but because it restores sovereignty within you. You stop bleeding attention into the external world and begin consolidating it inward. Thought becomes sharper. Emotion becomes steadier, action becomes deliberate, and from this silence, another transformation emerges, one that redefines how you experience pain itself. That is where the journey continues. Turning pain into strength. Pain enters every human life without asking for permission, and no philosophy, belief system, or discipline has ever succeeded in eliminating it entirely. Loss arrives, disappointment follows effort. Betrayal appears where trust once lived. The Stoics never promised you a painless life because they understood something far more important. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is not. The difference between the two is everything. Pain is what happens to you. Suffering is what happens inside you when pain is resisted, dramatized, or interpreted as a personal verdict. Most people spend their lives trying to avoid pain, and in doing so, they become fragile. They structure their choices around comfort, approval, and predictability, believing that safety lies in minimizing discomfort. But life does not reward this strategy. It rewards adaptability. The moment pain breaks through their defenses, and it always does, they collapse, not because pain is unbearable, but because they never learned how to carry it. Stoicism takes a different path. Instead of running from pain, it teaches you to meet it consciously, to examine it without panic, and to use it as raw material for inner strength. Pain, when approached correctly, becomes instructive. It reveals where you're attached, where you are dependent, where illusions still exist. It exposes weaknesses not to shame you, but to show you where growth is required. This is where transformation begins. When pain appears, the untrained mind asks, "Why is this happening to me?" and spirals into resentment. The Stoic mind asks, "What does this require of me now?" and regains agency. The event does not change, but the relationship to it does. Pain stops being an enemy and becomes a challenge, not something to escape, but something to pass through with awareness intact. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself that what stands in the way becomes the way, not as a motivational slogan, but as a practical instruction. Resistance multiplies pain, engagement refines it. When you stop demanding that pain disappear and start asking how to respond to it with dignity, strength begins to form quietly, without spectacle. This strength is not emotional hardness, it is emotional capacity. You allow yourself to feel pain fully without turning it into identity. You do not suppress grief, but you refuse to let it define you. You do not deny anger, but you do not obey it blindly. Pain is acknowledged, processed, and integrated rather than fought or performed. In this process, suffering loses its fuel. Over time, something changes in how you experience difficulty. You stop fearing discomfort because you trust your ability to endure it. You stop catastrophizing setbacks because you have survived them before. You stop interpreting pain as failure and start recognizing it as feedback. Each encounter with hardship leaves you slightly more grounded, slightly less reactive, slightly more confident in your own resilience. This is how pain becomes strength. Not by glorifying it, not by seeking it, but by refusing to waste it. Pain becomes a refining force when it is met with presence rather than panic, with reflection rather than resistance. It teaches patience, it sharpens perspective. It strips away what is unnecessary and reveals what actually matters. The Stoics did not believe that suffering made people noble. They believed that how you respond to pain reveals who you are becoming. A person who has learned to carry pain without collapse moves differently through life. They are less desperate for comfort, less fearful of loss, less shaken by uncertainty. Their calm is not ignorance of hardship, but familiarity with it. They know that pain can be endured, and because of this knowledge, it loses its power to intimidate them. This does not make life easier, it makes you stronger, and once pain is no longer feared, another quality begins to develop naturally. The quiet confidence that you can bend without breaking, recover without resentment, and continue forward without losing yourself. That quality is resilience, and it is where the next chapter begins, building resilience. Resilience is often misunderstood as toughness, as emotional armor, as the ability to endure without feeling, but this misunderstanding creates brittle people rather than strong ones. True resilience is not the absence of impact. It is the ability to absorb impact without losing structure. It is not about standing rigid against life's pressure, but about bending intelligently so that pressure does not break you. The Stoics never admired hardness. They admired endurance with clarity. Most people collapse under hardship not because the hardship is extraordinary, but because their inner structure is weak, their sense of self is too dependent on comfort, their expectations too fragile, their emotional regulation too external. When difficulty arrives, it overwhelms them because nothing inside has been trained to carry weight. Resilience is that training. It is built gradually, not in moments of ease, but in repeated encounters with discomfort where you choose awareness over panic and discipline over reaction. Each time life tests you and you remain internally organized, something strengthens quietly. You may not feel powerful in the moment, but you are becoming stable. This stability compounds. Resilience grows when you stop interpreting hardship as a personal failure and start seeing it as a condition of existence. Pain is no longer an anomaly, it is expected. Setbacks are no longer humiliations, they are data. Loss is no longer a verdict, it is part of movement. When this perspective settles, your nervous system changes how it responds to challenge. You no longer rush to escape difficulty. You no longer dramatize resistance. You no longer collapse at the first sign of pressure. Marcus Aurelius wrote repeatedly about meeting hardship with steadiness rather than complaint, not because hardship was desirable, but because complaining weakened the mind further. He understood that resilience is built by asking, again and again, what is required of me now, rather than, why should this not be happening? This question changes your posture toward life. Instead of shrinking, you orient yourself. Instead of resisting, you adapt. Instead of reacting emotionally, you respond deliberately. Each response strengthens your confidence in one essential truth. You can handle more than you think, not because you're invulnerable, but because you're flexible. Resilience is flexibility under pressure. A rigid mind breaks when expectations are violated. A resilient mind adjusts without losing coherence. It does not deny difficulty, but it does not magnify it either. It accepts reality quickly and allocates energy where it is useful rather than where it is loud. This is why resilient people appear calm, not because life treats them gently, but because they have stopped wasting energy on resistance. They have learned that emotional collapse does not reduce pain, it multiplies it. They have learned that steadiness preserves strength, and strength preserves choice. Over time, resilience creates a profound internal shift. You stop fearing uncertainty because you trust your ability to respond. You stop dreading challenge because you have survived challenge before. You stop building your life around avoiding pain and start building it around capacity. This does not make you reckless, it makes you grounded. A resilient person does not need ideal conditions to function well. They can think clearly under stress, act purposefully in difficulty, and recover without resentment when things go wrong. Their confidence is not optimism. It is earned trust in their own adaptability. They know that life will change, and that they will change with it without losing themselves. This is not bravado, it is inner architecture. Resilience is what remains when illusions of control have fallen away, attachments have loosened, pain has been integrated, and emotional independence has taken root. It is the quiet assurance that no matter what happens, you will meet it with presence rather than panic. And when resilience becomes part of who you are, solitude begins to take on a different meaning altogether, not as absence, but as a source of consolidation and strength. That is where the journey continues, embracing solitude. At this stage of the journey, solitude no longer appears as something to be avoided, endured, or explained away, because you have already learned that much of what once frightened you in being alone was not loneliness itself, but the absence of distraction, validation, and emotional crutches that once kept you from hearing your own inner voice. What now remains, once those dependencies have loosened, is not emptiness, but space. And space, when entered consciously, becomes strength. Most people fear solitude because they associate it with rejection or failure, as if being alone were proof that something went wrong, that they were not chosen, not wanted, not valued. Society quietly reinforces this belief by equating constant connection with success and silence with deficiency. And so people stay busy, surrounded, stimulated, not because it nourishes them, but because stillness would force them to confront themselves. Stoicism offers a different interpretation. Solitude is not weakness, it is self-sufficiency training. When you are alone without distraction, without immediate feedback, without the emotional noise of others, your inner world becomes visible in a way it never could before. Thoughts emerge that were previously drowned out. Emotional patterns reveal themselves without external interference. You begin to see how much of your behavior was shaped by reaction rather than choice, by habit rather than intention. This is not comfortable at first. Solitude removes the buffer between you and yourself. There is no one to impress, no one to blame, no one to regulate your emotions for you. What remains is responsibility, not the burden of it, but its clarity. You begin to realize that the quality of your inner life is entirely your own task, and that no amount of company can compensate for inner disorder. Epictetus taught that freedom begins when you depend as little as possible on what is outside your control, and solitude is where this lesson becomes undeniable. Alone, you are forced to confront how much peace you truly possess without reinforcement. You learn whether your calm is real or borrowed, whether your confidence is internal or propped up by approval. Over time, solitude changes texture. What once felt heavy becomes grounding. What once felt empty becomes spacious. What once felt isolating becomes clarifying. You begin to notice that your thoughts slow down, that your reactions soften, that your need to explain yourself fades. Silence no longer feels like punishment, it feels like alignment. This is where wholeness begins to form. In solitude, you are no longer fragmented by roles, expectations, or emotional demands. You do not have to be entertaining, agreeable, impressive, or available. You are simply present. And in this presence, your values become clearer, your priorities sharpen, and your sense of direction strengthens without external pressure. Solitude also reveals something crucial. You are more capable than you thought. You learn that you can endure boredom without panic, sadness without collapse, uncertainty without escape. You discover that being alone does not diminish you. It consolidates you. It gathers scattered energy and returns it inward, where it becomes focus, insight, and quiet confidence. This does not mean rejecting connection. It means choosing it consciously. When solitude becomes a source of strength rather than fear, relationships change. You no longer seek people to fill a void, regulate your emotions, or confirm your worth. You engage from fullness rather than hunger. Presence replaces need. Choice replaces dependence. This is why solitude is not an endpoint. It is a refining space. It prepares you to return to the world without losing yourself in it. It teaches you how to stand alone so that standing with others no longer requires compromise of your inner stability. You become whole on your own terms, and from that wholeness, connection becomes cleaner, lighter, and more honest. Embracing solitude is not retreat from life, it is preparation for it. And once solitude is no longer feared, another ability naturally emerges. The ability to focus with precision, to discern what truly matters, and to stop wasting attention on what does not. That is where the next chapter leads. The power of discernment and focus. Once solitude has done its work, and your inner world is no longer scattered by constant reaction, something quietly returns to you that modern life almost completely erodes. Discernment. You begin to notice that not everything deserves your attention, not every thought deserves belief, not every invitation deserves acceptance, and not every battle deserves your energy. What once felt urgent now feels optional. What once felt overwhelming now feels selectable. This is the birth of focus. Most people are exhausted not because life is demanding, but because they give their attention indiscriminately. They respond to every stimulus, absorb every opinion, chase every notification, and react to every emotional ripple in their environment. Their mind becomes a crowded room where nothing important can be heard clearly. Focus disappears not through laziness, but through misallocation. Stoicism treats attention as a form of power. Where your attention goes, your life follows. When you give it away carelessly, your days are shaped by noise rather than intention. When you guard it, your life begins to align around what actually matters. Discernment is the ability to decide what enters your inner world and what is left outside, not out of arrogance, but out of respect for your finite energy. This ability does not appear suddenly. It develops as a consequence of detachment. Once you are no longer emotionally dependent on outcomes, approval, or constant stimulation, you no longer feel compelled to engage with everything. You begin to pause before reacting. You ask yourself whether something deserves your time, your emotion, your words, and often the answer is no. This no is not rejection, it is precision. A focused mind does not rush. It does not chase novelty for its own sake. It understands that clarity is fragile and must be protected. When you stop filling your mental space with distractions, depth returns. Thoughts complete themselves. Decisions become cleaner. You are no longer pulled in 10 directions at once. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself to do what was essential and to let go of the rest, knowing that a scattered mind cannot live well. His discipline was not about doing more, but about doing less with greater integrity. He understood that the quality of attention determines the quality of action. Discernment also reshapes how you deal with people. You stop engaging in conversations that drain rather than enrich. You stop explaining yourself to those who are committed to misunderstanding. You stop reacting to provocation designed to steal your focus. This does not make you distant. It makes you intentional. Your interactions become fewer, but deeper. Your words become fewer, but heavier. Focus creates momentum. When your attention is no longer fragmented, effort compounds. You can stay with a task long enough to reach mastery. You can stay with an idea long enough to understand it fully. You can stay with discomfort long enough to grow through it rather than escape it. Focus turns discipline into direction. This is why discernment feels empowering. You are no longer overwhelmed by choice. You are no longer pulled by every opportunity. You see clearly what serves your values and what does not. And this clarity reduces inner conflict. Life becomes simpler, not because it has fewer options, but because you have fewer distractions. Focus is not intensity. It is alignment. It is the ability to bring your full presence to what matters most, without being diluted by what does not. When this ability stabilizes, your days feel fuller, even if they are quieter. Progress feels real, even if it is not visible. You begin moving with purpose rather than urgency. And from this focus clarity, another fear begins to dissolve, the fear of failure. Because once you are aligned with what truly matters, outcomes lose their power to define you. That is where the journey continues. Overcoming the fear of failure. The fear of failure does not come from failure itself, but from the meaning you were taught to attach to it. Somewhere along the way, failure stopped being an event and became an identity, a verdict on your worth, your intelligence, your future. You learn to associate mistakes with humiliation, setbacks with inadequacy, and uncertainty with danger. And so you began avoiding situations where failure was possible, not realizing that in doing so, you were also avoiding growth. This fear shapes more lives than any external obstacle ever could. People stay in relationships that no longer serve them because leaving might look like failure. They avoid pursuing meaningful goals because trying and failing feels worse than never trying at all. They delay decisions, soften convictions, and settle for comfort because failure threatens the fragile image they are trying to protect. What appears as caution is often fear in disguise. Stoicism dismantles this illusion quietly but completely. Failure, from a Stoic perspective, is not a moral judgment. It is feedback. It is information. It is a moment in a process rather than a conclusion about who you are. When this understanding takes root, fear begins to loosen its grip, because fear thrives only when outcomes are allowed to define identity. Epictetus reminded his students that success and failure belong to the realm of externals, while intention, effort, and integrity belong to you. You can fail honorably. You can fail intelligently. You can fail while remaining aligned with your values. And when you understand this, failure loses its power to shame you. The fear of failure is really the fear of exposure. It is the fear of being seen as incomplete, uncertain, or flawed. But Stoicism asks a simple and unsettling question. What if imperfection is not a defect, but a condition of being human? What if failure is not evidence that you are unworthy, but proof that you are engaged with life rather than hiding from it? When you accept this, something shifts internally. You stop trying to guarantee outcomes before acting. You stop waiting for perfect conditions that never arrive. You begin measuring success not by results, but by alignment, whether you acted with clarity, courage, and discipline, regardless of how things turned out. This does not eliminate disappointment, but it removes humiliation from the equation. Failure becomes survivable. More than that, it becomes useful. Each setback reveals where expectations were unrealistic, where preparation was insufficient, where attachment still exists. Instead of collapsing under these revelations, you integrate them. You refine your approach. You strengthen your judgment. Over time, failure stops feeling like a cliff and starts feeling like terrain, uneven, challenging, but navigable. This is where confidence becomes grounded. Not the loud confidence of guaranteed success, but the quiet confidence of knowing that even if you fall short, you will remain intact. You will not be destroyed by embarrassment. You will not lose your sense of self. You will not need to retreat into avoidance to protect your ego. A person who no longer fears failure moves differently. They take risks thoughtfully. They speak honestly. They act decisively, not because they are reckless, but because they are no longer paralyzed by the need to appear flawless. Their energy is no longer spent on self-protection, and that energy becomes available for growth. This does not mean you stop caring about outcomes. It means you stop letting outcomes own you. You still prepare. You still aim well. You still refine your craft. But you no longer confuse the result with your worth. You remain committed to the process, knowing that mastery is built through repetition, correction, and persistence rather than perfection. When the fear of failure dissolves, freedom expands. You are no longer living defensively. You are participating fully. You are willing to try, adjust, and continue without collapsing into self-judgment. Life becomes less about preserving an image and more about engaging with reality as it unfolds. And once failure no longer threatens your identity, a deeper form of freedom becomes possible. Freedom that does not depend on outcomes at all, but on inner peace, regardless of circumstance. That is where the journey moves next. True freedom. For most of your life, freedom was presented to you as control over circumstances, the ability to choose outcomes, secure stability, avoid pain, and shape the world according to your preferences. And yet, the more you chased this version of freedom, the more elusive it became, because circumstances are unstable by nature, people are unpredictable, and life does not submit to personal desire for long. What you called freedom quietly turned into dependence on conditions behaving correctly. Stoicism exposes this illusion without ceremony. True freedom is not the power to control what happens, but the power to remain internally intact, regardless of what happens. It is not the absence of obstacles, but the absence of inner captivity. A person who requires comfort, approval, certainty, or success in order to feel at peace is not free, no matter how many choices appear to be available to them. This is why Stoic freedom is inward. It begins the moment you stop negotiating your inner state with the external world, when praise no longer inflates you and criticism no longer defines you, when success no longer intoxicates you and failure no longer humiliates you, when gain does not make you arrogant and loss does not make you collapse. At that point, life can move freely around you without moving you from your center. Epictetus expressed this with unsettling clarity when he taught that only the person who desires nothing outside their control is truly free, because nothing external can threaten them. This is not a call to apathy, but a call to sovereignty. You still act, strive, and engage, but you no longer chain your peace to results you cannot command. Freedom, in this sense, feels quiet. There is no constant urgency to defend yourself, no compulsion to prove your worth, no panic when things do not unfold as expected. You respond instead of react. You adapt instead of resist. You move forward without dragging fear behind you. Life may still be difficult, but it is no longer oppressive, because oppression requires inner consent. This changes how you live. You make decisions based on values rather than fear. You choose paths that feel right rather than those that look safe. You accept uncertainty without paralysis. You allow life to unfold without constant interference. And because you are no longer fighting reality, your energy consolidates instead of scattering. True freedom is not rebellion against life. It is cooperation with it. You stop demanding that the world guarantee your peace, and you take responsibility for generating peace within yourself. This responsibility is not heavy. It is liberating. It removes the burden of control and replaces it with clarity of character. You know who you are, regardless of circumstance, and this knowledge stabilizes you more than any external assurance ever could. Freedom also changes how you relate to time. You are no longer rushing to arrive somewhere before something goes wrong. You are no longer living in anticipation of disaster or reward. You are present. You act when action is required and rest when rest is appropriate. The future loses its power to intimidate you because you trust your ability to meet it as it comes. This is not passivity. It is grounded agency. A truly free person is not chaotic or irresponsible. They are precise. They know where their power begins and ends, and they invest it accordingly. They do not waste energy on resentment, regret, or anxiety about what cannot be changed. They reserve their strength for judgment, action, and integrity. This is why Stoic freedom feels unshakable. It does not rise with fortune or fall with misfortune. It does not depend on circumstances aligning perfectly. It exists regardless of external order because it is rooted in inner order. And once this kind of freedom is established, something remarkable happens. The world loses its ability to intimidate you. From this place of freedom, the final transformation becomes possible, not detachment as avoidance, not resilience as survival, but a state of being where nothing external can reach far enough inside to disturb your core. That is where the journey concludes, becoming untouchable. At the end of this path, something quiet but irreversible takes place. You do not feel invincible. You do not feel superior. You do not feel detached from life in a cold or distant way. What you feel is something far more grounded and far more rare. You feel unreachable by forces that once controlled you from the inside. Becoming untouchable does not mean that nothing can hurt you. It means nothing can own you. Life will still bring loss, uncertainty, criticism, and pain. People will still misunderstand you. Plans will still fail. Change will still arrive without warning. But these experiences no longer penetrate to the core of who you are, because there is no longer a fragile center waiting to be destabilized. You have built something solid within yourself, not through avoidance, but through confrontation. This solidity is the result of everything that came before. You stop chasing control and learn to govern your responses. You loosened attachment and reclaimed inner authority. You learn to feel without collapsing, to stand alone without fear, to endure pain without wasting it, to focus without distraction, and to act without needing outcomes to validate you. Each step stripped away a layer of dependence until very little remained that the world could manipulate. This is what untouchable truly means. You are no longer emotionally negotiable. Praise does not inflate you because you do not depend on it. Criticism does not destroy you because you are no longer defined by perception. Loss does not erase you because your identity is not built on possession. Failure does not humiliate you because your worth is not measured by results. Even pain, when it arrives, is met with presence rather than panic. The world still touches your life. It just no longer controls your center. An untouchable person moves differently. They speak less, but with intention. They react slower, but with clarity. They choose carefully because they are no longer driven by fear, urgency, or approval. Their calm is not indifference. It is integration. Everything inside them has a place, and nothing is fighting for dominance. This is not emotional armor. Armor is rigid and breaks under enough force. What you have built is flexibility with structure, awareness with restraint, openness with boundaries. You can be present without being exposed, compassionate without being consumed, engaged without being enslaved. You are fully in the world, but no longer at its mercy. This is why such people feel rare. They are not loud, they are not reactive, they do not need to prove anything. Their strength does not come from control over others or circumstances, but from mastery over themselves. And because of that mastery, intimidation fails, manipulation loses leverage, and chaos no longer finds easy access. Becoming untouchable is not a destination you arrive at once. It is a state you maintain. It requires continued awareness, continued restraint, continued honesty with yourself. But once it is established, life feels different. You wake up less tense. You move through difficulty with more composure. You recover faster. You trust yourself more deeply, not because you expect things to go well, but because you know you can remain intact even when they do not. This is the quiet victory Stoicism offers. Not dominance over life, but freedom within it. Not immunity from pain, but immunity from unnecessary suffering. Not a hardened heart, but an unbreakable center. When you reach this point, detachment no longer feels like effort. It feels natural. You no longer have to remind yourself what you can and cannot control. Your nervous system already knows. You no longer chase peace, you carry it. And from this place, you do not retreat from the world. You meet it, calm, clear, untouchable. What you've just walked through is not a method for escaping life, but a way of finally standing upright within it. Detachment, as the Stoics understood it, is not withdrawal, coldness, or resignation. It is the discipline of placing your energy where it actually belongs and refusing to waste it on what was never under your command. When you stop trying to control everything, you do not become weaker, you become precise. When you loosen attachment, you do not lose meaning, you gain freedom. When you master your inner world, accept impermanence, release the need for validation, and face pain without resistance, something stabilizes inside you that no circumstance can easily disturb. This is not about becoming emotionless, it is about becoming unshakable. True strength is quiet. It does not argue with reality. It does not beg outcomes to behave. It does not collapse when things change. It adapts, responds, and continues forward with clarity. And when you reach this point, life no longer feels like a constant threat to your peace, because your peace is no longer negotiated with the world. Detachment is not the end of caring. It is the end of suffering. Unnecessarily. Carry this with you. You cannot control events, people, or outcomes, but you can always control your judgment, your response, and your character. And when those are firmly in place, nothing external has the power to break you from the inside. That is Stoic freedom.